talk to Courtney Cronin, our Bears insider here on ESPN 1000. It's Andrew and Hanley. Courtney, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you doing after that? I'm not sure what that was on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm expecting that the next Thursday game is going to be a 7-3 score, and then at some point we're going to get 3-0 to end a Thursday night game. Scoring is at a premium on Thursday nights, and I'm not really sure what it is. I mean, we've always complained about the Thursday night product, more or less, but man, it's ugly this year.
Al Michaels isn't really enjoying it either. He barely seems interested half the time.
Didn't he threaten to retire if there's another bad Thursday night game? I'm going golfing.
Yeah, they kept promising. He and Kirk kept promising a touchdown, and then they were getting a little nervous that we weren't going to see one. Courtney, what do you make of this offense at this point? Because obviously Luke Getsy is getting a lot of criticism from that Amazon analyst panel. And is it a play calling problem? Is it a Justin Fields problem? Is it a Ryan Poles I didn't do damn near enough to get a help around him problem, or all the above?
100% answer D, because there's so much blame to go around. And I think that, you know, there's no singular reason why they're in this spot. I mean, Fields has struggled, and there's been good moments that you think, okay, maybe something's finally clicking, like the Minnesota game in the second half. You know, you can't criticize his performance. He wasn't the reason that they lost that game. But then, you know, the interception in the red zone, because his arm angle wasn't in the right spot trying to fit a ball to Cole Kmet when they're facing cover zero. Like, there's little mechanical things where you're like, that's on the quarterback. And, you know, the pass to Ryan Griffin, yes, Griffin slowed down and looked stiff, but that's a throw that even Fields said. He's an NFL quarterback. You've got to make that. So yep. I think if you kind of, like, parse through what happened on Thursday and look at this team six games in, you realize that there's limitations on the quarterback because there's limitations within what he can do within this scheme because of the limitations of the talent around him. And there's just, you know, point blank, there's not enough when he's not on or he's not having a good game. The talent around him isn't enough to elevate the quarterback play like you've seen, you know, other examples of that elsewhere, where if the quarterback isn't having a great game, then you can rely on a dominant run game, or you can rely on receivers to get open and make the quarterback look good. So I think all of that being said, all the problems that the Bears face so far this season go hand in hand, and I don't know how it gets much better, to be quite honest, because of the way that this roster looks. But this roster is what's getting in the way of this team being able to get a true evaluation on Justin Fields in year two.
Courtney, based on what you said, and this was something I was thinking before you jumped on with us. Okay, so we have limitations all over the place. Is Luke Getsy calling the right game based on the limitations we have, or is he just calling the game based on hoping that people will step up to be able to execute these plays?
Yeah, I think there absolutely needs to be some scheme adjustments because, you know, we've seen Fields be successful when he's rolling out and he's rolling away from pressure because he's been pressured on 46% of his dropbacks this season. Like, that's an absurd amount.
And seems like about 75%, but
I know. I mean, like, the thing is, there have been clean pockets for him to operate from, which is, you know, when he has good protection, it looks really good, but it's so scarce now that, you know, he's under pressure. And I think some of that has to do, like, there's moments from this game against Washington where you're watching him stand there and kind of, like, deliberately hold on to the ball too long. Like, what are you not seeing in these moments? And it's not just a matter of, hey, this guy didn't get open. It feels like he's very much like a first read guy, which is fine. I mean, with young quarterbacks, teams usually design half field reads for young quarterbacks as they're developing because it's easier to process, especially with the speed in the NFL versus what he was used to in college. But I think that there's a lot more that can be done with what Luke Getsy can scheme to the strengths of Justin Fields. And when Matt Eberflus is talking about evaluating everything from, you know, not just like starting lineups, like I would imagine, you know, the biggest thing they're going to have to do is figure out how can they get a better offensive line combination than what they have right now. Like, why is Lucas Patrick not playing center? Is there any possible way that they can move things around to make this line, to solidify this line a little bit more? Because it's bad right now. The pass protection's awful.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some of that stuff you can scheme too. So I think that when they have this mini bye and the coaches have been, you know, in all weekend evaluating the scheme and everything else, there's ways to play to Justin Fields' strengths. They're just not doing yet. But then again, you can't pin it all on play calling when the roster looks like this, because you have to design plays to get guys open. And when your receiving core is as thin as the Bears is, it's going to look like this regardless of whether the scheme is placating the field strengths or not.
And Courtney, before the season, when some people were saying I knew it was bad, but they were saying they had the worst wide receiving talent in the league. That takes in a lot of bad. But Darnell Mooney, God bless him, 241 yards to this point. That's 48th in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, that you can't operate that way. And here's my biggest fear, as good as Montgomery and Khalil and Herbert spent, you can't start just going run heavy, because all those things you just said that are troublesome for the offense, including the quarterback, it's still about trying to evaluate Justin Fields. Now, you have to use the run game to keep pressure off him and to keep defenses honest. But they better not just, you know, turtle here and decide that they're going to win games by the run game and whatever defense they have here. You still have to give him opportunities to throw downfield. And to your point, he's got to, when he has open receivers and the time to throw, and he's had both, he's got to identify and get the ball to him.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no way they could just, you know, lean heavy on the run and hope that your defense can create opportunities late in games, kind of like what we saw after the Houston game. I remember that was the question I was trying to answer at that point. Like, is this how they want to do it? And very clearly after that, they show that they still were at least trying to open up the passing game more with what we saw in New York and then what we saw in Minnesota in week 5. But, you know, they have to find a way to evaluate Fields within the confines of what they have right now. Because, like, the thing is, like, it's not like baseball. Like, the trade deadline in the NFL, it just operates so differently than other sports where your roster cannot improve that dramatically. It's usually the teams who utilize the trade deadline the best are the ones who are, like, one piece away. Like, what the Rams did last year in trading for Von Miller with the Denver Broncos, like right at the trade deadline, that helped shore up their pass rush. You're not fixing an entire, you know, for them, it wasn't fixing their entire defense. It was one spot they really needed to fix. So mm-hmm. when people are asking about, what about DJ Moore? What about, you know, other ways to fix the roster in at the trade deadline? It's just unrealistic to think that even if they do make moves, like to acquire, like that it's going to improve the roster all that much. Now, one thing I'd be curious to see is, like, do they think that they need to become sellers at this point? Because I just don't buy it. Like, who's outside of Jalen Johnson? Robert Quinn's value has gone down. Roquan Smith's a free agent next year. Like, there's, you don't trade for guys like that at the deadline. I mean, someone like Jalen Johnson, who's got a couple more years on his contract, sure, but you've got to think of the other assets that they have and, like, what they actually are planning to build around. And now that we know that everything is going to be focused going forward offensively, I mean, at least that's where things are trending, you're not going to sell off a Darnell Mooney or a Cole Kmet. And frankly, I'm not really sure that other teams would be trading for those pieces anyway. So, like, I say all that to say, because I know I've gotten a bunch of questions about, hey, trade deadline's November 1st, what moves can they make? If they make any sort of move, it's not going to improve this roster all of a sudden to where you have a better evaluation of Justin Fields the second half of the season. Like, this is what it is right now, and you've got to work within this, which is going to require scheme adjustments to be able to get a better analysis on what your quarterback can do.
Yeah, for me, it's never been about the record this year. It's just about seeing Justin progress, and this past week seemed like a step back. Although, I will say, even though he kept getting knocked down and he obviously was hurting, he showed some toughness, it seems like, I haven't seen before. Now, I don't want to see that every week, because if we're seeing that every week, then he's really getting driven into the ground. But we saw a little toughness, so I saw a little maturation, I guess I would say, in that. And it's small baby steps, and that's maybe all we can consider. But then he did take steps back in other ways.
Yeah, and I'll say this about Justin Fields. That guy is a tough SOB. Like, I have covered a lot of quarterbacks in this league, but stuff that he, you know, the stuff he did in college, remember him getting drilled by James Skalski, the linebacker from Clemson, in that in the Sugar Bowl, and then he goes, like, I remember watching him on the bike wincing in pain, and then he goes and throws 6 touchdowns in the second half. Like, what he did on Thursday night was remarkable. And I think it was Montez Sweat said that they kept expecting him not to get up. Like, and he was smart too. And this is one thing that I think, I don't know how many people picked up on this, but with him getting hit as often as he did, and he was kind of slow and deliberate to get up at first, I think that that's to make sure he steadies himself, because the second now in you know, after the Tua stuff, the second you show any sort of wobbliness, maybe in the way that you move, you're probably entering concussion protocol. And I think he was smart to kind of take a minute, breathe, make sure he's good, and then get up. But gosh, he's like, you can't, if there's anything you can't knock him for, it's that he is a tough dude. And that, I mean, it's scary at times because he takes hits, and it's like, you've got to put him in a spot where he's not susceptible to this many like rib crushing blows. And I know he got his shoulder, like it drove in, his left shoulder got driven into the ground. And he said afterwards, when I asked him, that it was an injury, kind of like re-aggravated something he was already dealing with, which is, I'm like, when did that happen? Because we had no clue. He hasn't shown up on the injury report with it. But you just, you know, like last year with the ribs injury and everything else, like he did miss time. They can't afford to have that happen this year. But, it, you know, if he keeps playing this way and if he keeps taking these hits, he probably won't last the whole season.
You mentioned Cole Kmet, and no one would give you anything for the whole host of names you went through. And I'm with you on that. He's not their guy, but yet he was a second round pick. Here we are, this far down the road, and he's, I think, average targets, 2.5 targets a game. And I have no bigger handle or more of a handle on him now than I did a few years ago. And that's concerning to me, because I don't know if they're showing a lack of faith in Cole Kmet. And at times he's, you know, drop balls he should have caught, and maybe he's given him a reason to have lack of faith. What do you make of the tight end that, local kid, Notre Dame product, everyone was rooting for him when he became a Bear, but I can't see him on this team next year if this continues the way it has been.
Yeah, and I mean, he was thrust into a role where he's tight end one in this offense because they didn't have anyone else. But that's it's the same argument with Mooney. Like, I mean, and I'll use Mooney as an example. He's a really good wide receiver. In another offense, he's probably a two, and that's okay. It's nothing. It's no knock on him. It's just that, you know, Fields' top two pass catchers that he had proven chemistry with coming off of last season, you know, are put into roles that they probably wouldn't be on in other teams because of necessity here. So what I make of Cole Kmet, and I know that he, like, first couple games, he didn't have many targets come his way, like, if at all. I think there was, like, one in the Green Bay game because he was running routes, but obviously, like, the ball didn't come his way, but he was also, like, used as a blocker. And, you know, the thing with Kmet as a pass catcher, he doesn't have top-end speed, and he doesn't, you know, get a lot of yards after the catch, which that's okay. It's just you've got to, like, pick your spots with a guy like that. And, you know, going back to, like, think of the Giants game, like, I wouldn't use him on a screenplay on 3rd and 15 inside the red zone. Like, you got to be smarter with certain things like that, because he can be a beneficial asset, but it's not this threat over the middle of the field who's going to create mismatches for you with the safety that maybe we thought it could be just on what was being sold this offseason. But utilizing Kmet, they had the good play to him. There's a play against Minnesota, I thought, that was one of Fields' better throws. And he's in a spot where he needs to be able to rely on guys like that. And this, I thought, like, his production would come in the red zone in ways that it really truly has not this year.
Before we let you go, real quick, Velus Jones, has he been humbled, or can we trust him another time, or is he not going to see the football for a while?
My analysis coming out of the game, I predicted that they'll go back to Dante Pettis at punt returner. I don't look like he's a 25-year-old rookie, and I'm not saying that age is a factor there, but like he hasn't been doing punt return for all that long. He did it at Tennessee last year, but he did it for 1 year, and it's not a mechanical thing. It, like, that punt that he should have let go, he said, like, based on the rules of where he was in the field and backed up, like, a touchback would have been so much more beneficial. Yet what happened was he was trying to do too much.
He was trying to be a hero, yeah.
Yeah, and we heard the same thing from Amir Smith-Marset last week, where I sometimes sense that some of these guys on offense are realizing the lack of contributions, because, and like, you know, everything's on Fields, and these guys like internalize that and try to do too much, try to make a play, and it ends up costing this team. And I know he chalked it up to, like, you know, it's a rookie mistake, I won't do it again. But I think that, you know, the muff punt in New York, when they had, those were only, like, those our last chance to score, last reasonable shot to actually get back in that game, and the muff punt kind of botched that, and then for this one to lead to a touchdown two plays later because he muffs it and Washington recovers, I just don't know, for a team that has got so many holes, I just feel like you can't go back to the well on that one, not right now at least. I would anticipate that would be one of the personnel changes that they'd be making during this mini bye week.
Courtney Cronin, our ESPN 1000 Bears insider, enjoy all the football today. Enjoy the day off from the Bears. We appreciate all your work, and we'll talk again to you soon.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Thanks, Courtney.
Yeah, ESPN 1000 will take your calls, 312-332-3776. It's Xander and Hanley till noon here on ESPN 1000. We look forward to talking to you.
Welcome back to Xander and Hanley on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
You know, I told him afterward, man, he is tough. I mean, that guy is tough, and man, he can get out of a lot of things. And that one run he had down the side, I mean, that's some of that stuff's just amazing. You know, the type of player he is, and the toughness, the mental toughness that he has. I mean, it's phenomenal. You know, so he'll hang in there with the best of them. You know, and it's exciting to see, you know, the guys rally around him and see that toughness, because you'll rally around a guy like that. You know, that's just got that mental and physical toughness that he has. And so I just told him I was real proud of him, the way he hung in there. So, again, they got some good D linemen. Obviously, they got some first-rounders, and they're going to give a lot of guys fits as they have. But, yeah, I was just real proud of him. Come on.
That's Flus talking about his quarterback and how tough he is. I just wish he didn't need to be that tough. Yes, it's a rallying point, Brian, but, you know, he's running for his life. He has no choice but to be tough. And may I say, Courtney Cronin does such a great job covering the Absolutely. Bears. We know this, right? And she brought up a great point that Jake and I were talking about off air, about how Justin was very slow to get up and very measured, making sure he got his breath, making sure he... Yeah, he had his bearings before he got up because of what happened with Tua, and Tua was hurt. Tua should not have been playing. I'm just concerned that Justin will hide, if he's doing this, he'll hide some sort of injury that he really needs to have looked at right away. Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully it was the case of, look, if I get up too fast, you know, I might stumble a little bit, and then all of a sudden...
And then I'll be going to the top.
Yeah. I'm done. As long as he's not hiding anything serious, because we don't need to see that, right? That he's hiding anything serious, because...
Well, you don't... look, the last thing you need is him to get hurt, and then this season to be a throwaway because you can't evaluate him because he's not available.
Right, right. It's not about winning games this year. It's about evaluating Justin Fields.
But it's not about winning games, but to me it's about how are you losing games... Thursday
great
night.
Point. Yes, yes. And Thursday night was no good. We lost to the Vikings, and even though there were a few things we could have adjusted, well, hopefully we had learned from them, but that wasn't, even though that was a loss to somebody in the division, we don't like the Vikings, but that was less hurtful than the Commodores loss. Commanders. Or
absolutely. But she brought up the percentage of being pressured at whatever, 46%.
Yeah,
23 sacks. And see, the offensive line is responsible for a lot of them, but not all of them. That's some of it's on the quarterback.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that he's got a 54.7 completion percentage, that you can't evaluate this and say anything about it is good. Again, I get the fact that you have a fifth-round pick is your left tackle. And it's a hodgepodge offense, and Cody Whitehair's not even in there now. But there are plays that he has to make, and mm-hmm. that pass to Ryan Griffin has to be executed completed.
Doubt. Yeah,
I was wincing watching him get hit and get up, and even when he wasn't getting sacked.
Yep.
the pressures and the amount of pressures. But that creates happy feet, and then sometimes he wants to take off when he doesn't need to because it's instinct, right?
He's getting beat up. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And what we were talking about, Luke Getsy, now we talked to Bear Fan Bob, and you know his opinion was, and I get it, Luke is calling a good game, and everybody has to step up their game. My concern was, and I brought this up to Courtney, was that Luke Getsy has to, at some point, say, it is what it is. These guys are not able to do this set of plays because they just can't get there. So I have to adjust the game to the players that we have. We try to get them up. They're not responding. It's about developing Justin, and maybe there's better plays to make where Justin has more confidence. He stops with the happy feet. He's able to complete a pass and complete more of them consistently. And they're not flashy. They're not pretty. We're not winning games, but we see some forward motion on Justin's part.
Look, and Getsy after the Minnesota game said, you know, those are cheap completions that he gets. But Courtney just brought it up. On a 3rd and 15, and you and I have talked about this, there are times the play absolutely demands, the situation demands you throw downfield. And to throw to Cole Kmet 5 yards over the line of scrimmage when you need 15 and then hope that he gets yards after the catch, good luck. That's, you're not evaluating, and your percentage of success in that with you know, Cole Kmet, who's not fleet of foot, as Courtney pointed out. Mm-hmm. When the situation says throw downfield, you better throw downfield. And I don't care if that means the offensive line has to be better, and they know the defense is coming on that play. But don't have a bailout play, because that doesn't serve anyone's purpose, in particular the evaluation situation going on with QB1.
Right, and we talked about taking the training wheels off and pushing the game. And again, it is about winning, but this is not going to be one of those seasons where we're going to win more than we lose. However, how are we losing? And what we saw Thursday was awfully painful. 312-332-3776 for a lot of different reasons. And think of the mistakes that Justin isn't making that others are making on offense, and what a difference that might have made in the win-loss column up until this point. Might have been a couple of games.
But to have a ball go off a guy's helmet because of your arm angle, that's a problem. I mean, that's something on him, right? That's not a coaching. That's not a play call. That's unacceptable, especially given where you are on the field at that point, and it just stops a drive cold. And they get the lucky bounce in the air, and it ends up going the other way. But it's little things like that. And no one questions his toughness, and I think he's a leader in every sense of the word. Mm-hmm. But that's only part of being a quarterback. It's a big part of it. Yep. It's also being better than completing half your passes. 54.7% ain't getting it done. Being at the bottom of the NFL in passer rating is not getting it done. And at some point, it's not about the wasted season that was 2022. You're now 6 games into 2023, and it has to look a lot better in these upcoming, you know, 6, 7, 8 games before you even get to the stretch run.
312-332-3776. What's good about the Bears? Are we missing something we should be talking about? What were your expectations? To develop Fields or to win more games? And, you know, how bad was it for you this past Thursday? We're taking phone calls at 312-332-3776. We've got Tom. He's here in the South Loop, wants to jump in on ESPN 1000. Hey, Tom.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Yeah, you know, I think it's just more of the same, unfortunately, for the Bears. And first of all, I'll say, you know, to the Bears fans, you know, you gotta love them. It's not a good team, and they're out there at Soldier Field, waving those flags, getting loud, watching pretty much garbage. So first of all, shout out to the Bears fans, right? Hopefully, we get a little something better. But, you know, I had said before, when the Bears are on the clock, look, if they're going to go all in on a quarterback, which they kind of did again, and I said at the time, Mac Jones is the pick. Mac Jones. And here's my logic for it. head-to-head in that championship game, I'll take the guy that wins. Now, it's not fair, I understand, that Alabama is probably a better team. So that's not on Justin. But overall, Justin should have at least had a better performance if that's the guy you want to take, in my opinion, right? When you're going to see the difference in the organizations and the quarterback position when the Bears play the Patriots Monday night, it's going to be glaring. Mark my words. With that said, Justin,
if Jones is out there, because right now they're on their third string quarterback, are your guys happy? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he may not be back in time. Yeah, that's right. True. But believe me, I just don't understand. I didn't understand the pick. I said it then. Justin's a good kid, tough as nails. The poor kid.
Yep.
The poor kid. Again, you go out. You know, if you buy a Lamborghini, you want to protect it. The Bears can't understand that. Okay, we're going to invest all these draft picks. How many has it been? I mean, four or five, right? Four or five that would be first-round draft picks on this team right now. And they could have gotten Jimmy Garoppolo for a second. The kid who came in at the Deflategate went 3-1 with a boatload of pressure. I'm not saying Garoppolo is Hall of Fame. He's a winner. And I would have taken all those.
Remember, there was talk that they called New England and tried, and they, I don't know if they weren't offering enough, but New England said thanks, but no thanks. But yeah, I'm with you. I was excited at the time thinking, oh, he looked good here. He's a local kid too.
Yeah.
But didn't he end up going for a second round pick? I thought he did. Now, I know you had to re-sign him again the next year, but again, being a Chicago kid, I think they could have done that. I think in the end, he could have gone. I think he went for a second round pick. You know,
you're
regardless,
probably right. I'd have to go back and look. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many things that are glaring. And I actually, you know, if the Bears had a better team, I'd probably be angry with Velus Jones. But you know what? I feel bad for him. I just think he's scared out there. I think he's scared. I feel bad for him. I just don't even see how you can put him out there again. Certainly, you know, catching punts.
Right.
Catching punts.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thanks for the phone call. You know, Courtney brought up something that I thought was interesting, you know, talking about Velus, is that she thought that he was trying to do too much. And we were talking about that before we talked to Courtney. And then she brought up the point of, look, he and other players see that Justin is shouldering all of this. So they're like, wait a minute, maybe I can help here. And what Jones did, not letting that punt go, was a huge mistake. But he was trying to be a hero. So I'm not sure if he was scared or definitely trying to do too much. Either way, he made the wrong choice.
And making that wrong choice goes to coaching as well, right?
Yep,
because they say, okay, if you're inside the 10-yard line, let that ball go, right? They pick a yard line, and you know where you are. And then you have to reinforce that before the play, not getting out of bounds. You have to reinforce the situational football. And
as
I'm
crazy
with
as it might be, because that stuff is just, it should be innate.
It should be. But you're talking about guys who haven't been doing it for a while, if at all.
Yeah.
And trying to make a play, trying to make up for something that you didn't do right the first time. You have to know to get out of bounds, because those extra 2 yards don't mean anything. And not only does the clock keep going, but oh, there's the turnover and the game's over. Mm-hmm. That's football IQ, which you hope players have innately, but that has to be reinforced whenever possible.
And so if the mistake is made, as long as it's not repeated, but we have seen some repeated mistakes, Brian.
Absolutely. And which, you know, again, Matt Eberflus is doing this for the first time. Luke Getsy is doing this for the first time. It's, I think Williams is even doing it for the first time, right? So it's guys are learning on the sideline, learning on the job too, and we've seen some issues there.
And, you know, and I'll tell you why this team reminds me of the White Sox this year. It's not good. Yeah, we'll be right back to take your calls. 312-332-3776. It's a pretty simple concept, but it just hit me. We'll get into that and more when we come back here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
This is Xander and Hanley on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Back to it here on a Sunday morning, ESPN 1000, Xander and Hanley. We're talking sports. We're talking Bears football. We'll talk to Jesse Rogers at 11 a.m. We've got an edition of High Low as we're on for 3 hours today. Hey, you're a Bruce Springsteen fan. Did you see that he is releasing an album of soul covers?
Yes.
I've heard a bit of it, and he did...
Night Shift was the latest one.
Speaking of the Commodores.
Yeah.
He did Night Shift, and it's really an interesting take. Bruce basically said, and I saw the whole preamble on his website, where he said, I just feel like I wanted to lend my voice to these classics. So it's a soul covers album that comes out in, mid-November? Something like that?
Yeah, they've released a couple of the songs, two songs so far, right?
Okay.
Do I Love You? Yes, I Do.
Okay.
That was terrific. And the one thing I'll say about Bruce is he not only appreciates the history of music, but all different, versions.
Genres, yes, he does.
Yeah. And he also said this about this album. He's at the tender young age of 73. He said he's always made light of the fact that he didn't think he has a very good voice for a guy who mm-hmm. sells out football stadiums and tours and is the boss, after all. And he said at 73, after doing this album of these great soul hits, he said he gives himself props. He said, you know what? Voice ain't so bad for 73. Maybe I was too harsh on evaluating what he had going for himself. And it's... I appreciate anyone who keeps reinventing himself, right? And that's what he's been doing. I mean, he's been doing that for the last 10 years, for sure.
Yep.
So
yeah,
so
he has been another one that was famous for doing that all the time throughout his career. David Bowie, the late great.
Yep.
Reinvented himself every time. But I what Bruce said, and when I heard the version of Night Shift, I thought, yeah, not bad. You're a huge Bruce fan. I mean, not as much as you, not anywhere as much as you. You're the nut that wants to spend thousands of dollars.
I need therapy. If I spent the money on therapy, I might be better off.
That's personal choice, Brian.
Yeah.
So hearing him lend his voice to these songs are unforgiving, right? You can't go into this without your best approach, and he lived up to the task so far, what I've heard. So it's been pretty pleasant. All right, back to sports. I was talking about how the Bears team reminds me of the Sox, and you're like, what? Okay, here's why. First of all, it's not because the Bears had a bunch of potential and they're squandering it. We knew going in. That's right. The Sox problem. However, as we're talking about, okay, the Bears should have done this. They've got coaches learning on the job. They've got a new GM. They've got players on defense that aren't playing up to their potential, like a Robert Quinn. They've got a leaky O-line. They've got a Justin Fields that's not making the right decisions in a short amount of time. And it's like, just like the Sox, so many problems, I don't know where to look. It's like a dam with all these cracks in it, right? And all this water's coming through. It's like, which one do we patch first? You don't have enough hands.
And do you have the want to, with the White Sox in particular? What are you going to do in this offseason besides hiring a manager? We know that. But, is Jose Abreu as good as gone? Is Daryl Van Schouwen in the Sun-Times wrote today that it's... I'm with you. In the front office... wasn't even unanimous in offering him the last contract.
Which is hard to believe. I don't understand that. I remember when that was happening. It's like, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Why are we even questioning that? Right.
So if you're a Sox fan, you can weigh in too. What needs to be done this offseason? And we start the show talking about how terrific October baseball's been, and the Guardians are right in the mix of that. And those are young guys, the youngest roster in Major League Baseball, and they don't have the pop and the power. But they're finding a way of getting it done. And we talked about one of our callers today. Look at those hits. It's a bloop here.
It's not this tremendous exit velo stuff, which Ozzie Guillen has always said that is a tremendously overrated statistic. And it is, because it's not about how hard if you're hitting it hard, you're blazing it right to people. That you don't get extra credit for a hard hit baseball.
No, but you need to hit home runs, and they didn't do that nearly enough. I mean, the fact that Abreu had 15 home runs, and I think...
Was it Andrew Vaughn and Elvis Andrus that tied for the lead at 17? Was that
crazy?
Right?
Crazy.
I mean, know!
So,
I know.
So you need pop and
we
power.
We have multiple
for sure.
30-run home run hitters on that team.
Yep. And so you need that. But I'm with you. It's Ozzie ball. Yeah, and he was famous for get him on, get him over, get him in.
Mm-hmm.
And how many men did they leave in scoring position this year? And they just couldn't get sustained rallies. Certainly in postseason baseball like we watched yesterday, you're talking about two strike, two out guys delivering on their last chance, right, and finding a way to pick up their team and get a win.
If we would have been 30% better on stranding base runners, 30% less base runners stranded, would that have gotten us first place in the division? Might have.
Might have. You still
need. That might have been the difference.
You still need at least a couple guys to break that always tough 20 home run mark.
Help. Yeah, well, that too. But, you know, one step at a time. And again, this is about multiple layers of issues. And sometimes it just seems when we're talking about the White Sox, it just seems like that there's so many things we have to address that it's a bit of an impossible task inside one off season. But then again, Maybe it's that's just too dramatic. Maybe we're just a couple of moves away, and everybody else having played to their potential and staying away from these major injuries. Maybe we're that close, or are we that far?
Well, when Rick Hahn says it's likely changes will be made via trade, then it begs the question: who's tradable, and what do you have to give to get? And I know you've been following it on Twitter.
I have been vocal about the one player nobody wants to trade. And I think it's just ridiculous. Everybody's going nuts about
it. It's polarizing. I mean, because there are plenty of people in your camp saying that Tim Anderson's got to be traded. And again, if you just look at it from a baseball standpoint, you know what he is when he's on. He wasn't on nearly enough this year.
But that's the thing. How much on are we going to see versus how much off? And I had this argument with my son last night. He's like, you cannot trade TA. And it's like, well, here's the thing. If we are now we have to get the right person in return. We can't give him away. But I think our best shot at getting a good player in return, or maybe we just decide to go all in on Correa. If Correa avails himself, right?
Right. We'll talk to Jesse, what does that contract look like? If Correa is the opts out and then he's on the market again.
But then again, we have Jerry Reinsdorf to contend with.
What does that contract look like? Yeah. And with Tim Anderson, though, he's become a polarizing figure, I guess, because if I'm following Twitter, there's no middle ground. People like your son are saying you're out of your mind if you even discuss trading him. He's the face of your franchise, and he's an all-star.
I don't buy that face of the franchise stuff. It was 2 years ago. Look, a leader leads in good times and in bad. And we see that he likes to lead in good times. And then it becomes too hard for him to lead in bad times. Now, we've heard whisperings that there's some personal stuff going on in his life, and I get it. But a job is a job, and it's easier said than done. I understand all of that, but he did not lead in the tough times. Leaders lead in good times and bad. Right then and there, I feel like he's not the face of the franchise and the leader of the franchise because of that.
It would be very interesting to see or to hear if they don't actually pull a trigger on that trade. If the phone rings and they're not necessarily shopping Tim Anderson, but the phone rings and people are inquiring.
Yeah.
I would love to know. And if they actually trade him, we will know how the rest of Major League Baseball views him in terms of his worth and what you would get in return, because he's coming off not his best season for sure. So you're selling kind of low, relatively speaking. But I'd love to know how other GMs view Tim Anderson and what they'd be willing to part in order to get him.
Now, here's something. We're up against the break. Again, we're going to talk to Jesse Rogers, so we'll dive more into this at 11:15. But when we come back from the break, there is something that if I could talk to TA today and he gave me an indication of something that he is willing to do, then I'm back all in on him. We'll talk about that. Take your phone calls when we come back here. 312-332-3776 on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to Xander and Hanley on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
Yeah. program.
Taking your phone calls, 312-332-3776, inside the Old National Bank Studio on State Street. This is ESPN 1000, Xander and Hanley. Brian, before the season began, there's no way I'm talking about TA ever being traded. But what I saw this year was a lack of leadership. Again, you know, the year previous when the Field of Dreams game, he hit the big home run, changed the game, hashtag changed the game, and all that stuff, that TA-focused stuff, right? This year, it was, you know, his hitting was on and off, and that's okay. You know, some players are hot, cold, he always has been. But I will say this, early on in his career, and you were following, even though you're more of a Cubs fan, you were following it to the degree that him winning a batting championship was a surprise, because sure, that's not who he was when he came up to the major leagues, right? So he worked his tail off to be that hitter. What I want to hear from him in this offseason is that he will work his tail off to be more or less flash and more substance defensively. And he will work on being a little, you know, a little more of a consistent leader, because we need that person. Jose leaves. Who's the leader? Now, I am not saying that we keep Elvis Andrus and start him at short and trade Tim. That, you know, so,
no,
I've
that
seen some of those
done.
People. Yeah. Some of those people on Twitter are like, "What are you going to do? Do that?" No, that is not.
You're talking
what I'm
about
saying.
Going to get Correa,
or going to get a stud shortstop. And trade Tim for, you know, maybe a starting pitcher, whatever it is, the best possible player, if that's in the cards. The thing is, what makes him tradable this year for me was that lack of leadership. It does drive me nuts that he has been suspended several times for getting hot and, you know, bumping into an umpire.
Well,
that's discipline. That's just, yeah.
It's a great point. When it comes to leadership, you can lead by example, as Jose Abreu does.
Mm-hmm.
You
can't, quietly. Yep.
Quietly. But when all this stuff came out at the end of the season, you know, first half of the season was like, oh, we're going to get hot. Oh, we're hitting the ball. We're barreling the bat and the ball, and everything's going to fall, and everything's going to be great. And we just got to keep grinding, and don't worry, it's early yet. And then at the end of the year, you heard, well, Johnny Cueto was the first to call him out, like, if we got any fight here, we better start showing it, if we have any. Mm-hmm. And then Lance Lynn, you know, we sucked forever. And you know, talking, the clubhouse issues came out. And I think we saw it even before Kenny Williams reportedly went down there and talked to the team, which was odd that Rick Hahn wasn't the guy. It was Kenny, because we know Fiery Kenny goes down there and starts. But how much is that on Tim Anderson? If the clubhouse has issues, and if guys aren't bringing it every day, and we see the same mistakes.
Right,
and errors,
you know you're the leader.
Right. I mean,
you've been told you're the leader, and you're telling everybody you're the leader.
Right. How much does that clubhouse issues lay at his feet, too? How much is he responsible for not either getting Tony to change the culture or being part of the change himself or getting guys' faces? And I think the answer is, yeah, he has to wear some of that, or if not a lot of it.
Right, right. And he has to mature more. I think it's a lack of maturity in some ways. And we've got Zach in Aurora wants to jump on about TA. On ESPN 1000, hey, Zach.
What's going on, fellas? Hey man, I think we got to be careful when talking about players and their off-the-field personal reasons as to why they're not performing on the field. I think we see that with Eddie Jackson. Eddie Jackson went through off-the-field personal issues last year, and then it comes out, and now everybody's like, oh, well, you know, okay, now we understand. So we have to have that same understanding even when we don't know what this guy. You're asking this guy, Tim Anderson, to lead 25 men that's not doing their job and a manager that's getting heat for not doing his job. But he's supposed to be the awesome leader and then an awesome player on the field and then an awesome dad and man off the field. Like, we got to – I feel like as fans and media, there's so much on these guys' shoulders. When the team didn't construct Tim Anderson to be around guys that he can lead. He couldn't lead half the guys that were on that team because they wasn't going to do their job, and they didn't. So Tim Anderson couldn't make a trade at the deadline. He couldn't get the guys that's in the offseason.
Right, right, Zach. That's not the type of leader I'm talking about. I'm talking about a leader in the clubhouse. You know, he positioned himself that way, changed the game. T.A., he's the face. He's the, you know, he's the stick that stirs the drink, all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, but that doesn't mean that he's also the talent on the field. So when he steps out, when one steps out to say, hey, I'm the leader, put it on my shoulders. Now you guys, us as the media and the fans, is like, okay, you're the leader. Let's see you lead. But we will say Jose Abreu is the leader, but he don't say it. He just do it. And so what I'm saying is let's let these players, you know, figure it out, because they obviously they didn't figure it out this year. But to bring up personal reasons off the field and put that into the mixture of the reason why he wasn't a great leader and the reason why they didn't win, that's just not fair in my opinion.
Well, I don't even know what there is personal issues. All we know is rumors, and I have no idea how it affected him. And thank you for the call, Zach. But, you know, look, I get it. The human condition, Brian, we all go through stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, that is not to excuse anything, but we all go through stuff and we all have to, you know, most of us have to work and we have to perform in certain ways. We have to be good people to our kids and our parents and all this stuff while all this craziness is happening in our life. There's a lot to balance for everybody.
Well, and if you believe what you read on social media and there's pictures and everything else, and again, I have no idea.
I honestly haven't even looked that deep into what's going on
with
him. Okay,
I mean, it was out there.
I know. I know a little bit.
And so if you choose to believe that, if our caller just mentioned Eddie Jackson, we were all wondering why he was, you know, doing next to nothing last year. And he came out and went on the record and talked about he and his girlfriend went through a couple miscarriages. I mean, things that he had no control over, and yet He obviously, you know, that's a terrible thing to have to go through anytime. And so you can't, life happened to him.
Right.
If you believe what you see on social media, TA made choices that created issues. Now, I don't know if they're true or not true, but we all make choices in life every single day.
Yep.
And sometimes
we swing and miss and we have to try to work our way through it.
Yeah, and we're all not perfect, not by a long stretch, and things get messy, life gets messy, but Eddie Jackson, life happened to him, and if you believe the stuff you see out there, you know, T.A. might have made his life messier than it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That said, I'm with you. Change the game. I'm the face. You want to get that swagger and be that guy.
You can't just say it. You have to actually live up to it, and you have to do that consistently.
Amen. You have to walk the walk if you're going to talk the talk.
Right. You cannot pick and choose the timing of which you are going to change the game and you're going to be the face of the team. Either you are or you aren't.
And that clubhouse obviously had issues, and our caller's right. You know, we got on Tony. Where was fiery Tony La Russa? And it's not just because he's advanced in years.
No, he wanted to make friends with everybody on the team. He was more interested in being, you know, it's like one of those things where the parent wants to be the teenager's friend. So they let them do whatever because they don't want them to be mad at them because they want to be their friend. No, you're a parent. You're not the friend. You're the parent.
Because one concern when Tony was hired was he will not be able to relate to the young star players because he's, you know, there's such a disparate age there.
Yep.
And he went the other way and he wouldn't bring a guy into the office and shut the door and get in his face. He would go out and put an armor on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And say, hey, what's going on? You know, let's try this. You know, try to be everybody's friend, as you said. And at some point, the manager, he creates the culture, but so do the leaders on the team. And when that culture slips, then the leaders and the manager have to make sure that
leaders have to speak up and try to right the wrong if you're a leader. And again, you can't just be loud and celebratory just when you're winning. We need the leader more so when you're not winning.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. 312-332-3776. We're up against the break. We're coming back. We've got an edition of High Low coming at you next on ESPN 1000.